When she found a tether line for the white wind, she caught it and headed north, carefully shifting to a darker wind whenever she could until she was riding the purple dusk wind to the keep. Dropping from the black winds, Damon aimed the coach at the estate that was a couple of miles from a village on the border of Little Tyrael. He didn't intend to announce his presence until he was right on top of the problem. But since the district queen who ruled this village didn't live here, he reached for the males in her home village and let his voice thunder a message through a psychic spear thread. "Get here. Now." Once he landed the coach and let his black power roll over the land, they would know where to find him. And they would do everything they could to accommodate him, because they, and their queen, wouldn't want him looking in their direction. Not when his temper had turned cold and he was riding the killing edge. The door to the driver's compartment slid open. Chanel said, "We need to find Bayron and Sylvia. Michael should be safe with Tildy."
"I will find Bayron," Ledvarian said. "I can run faster, and I can smell him, even if he is hiding."
Damon didn't argue, since the dog was right. He wrapped the coach in a black sight shield as they approached the estate.
"Front door?"
he asked, glancing back as Cyril moved up to join them. Both women now wore trousers, boots, and body-hugging tops that wouldn't get in the way of fighting or healing.
"Front door," Chanel agreed. "I'm not sensing anyone in the front lower rooms," Cyril said. "There are clusters of people in the upper rooms. We should go in fast and quiet."
"Agreed," Chanel said. "These people haven't lived around Kindred. They have no reason to think Tildy sent a message that could have reached us so fast. If Sylvia and Bayron are being held, no one will be expecting us, not this soon."
Damon landed on the drive, using craft to create a blanket of air so that the coach silently came to rest just above the gravel. As soon as the coach settled, Ladvarian passed through the door and disappeared.
"Sylvia," Damon called on a psychic thread. "Sylvia."
No response of any kind, not even a weak effort of someone sick or injured.
"Bayron?"
Barely a flicker, but he thought there was some response. Damon stepped out of the coach, then waited for Janelle and Cyril. The three of them moved up to the front door together, then passed through it one by one. Damon took the lead while Cyril guarded their backs. As he headed up the stairs, probing and searching, Ladvarian shouted,
"Janelle!"
Damon leaped up the remaining stairs, moving fast to stay ahead of Janelle, following the sounds of barking and shouting. He burst into the room, a black shield fanned out in front of him to protect the women behind him. A huddle of people. Several adults, and the boy, Hayes. A healer cringed near a narrow bed, her eyes on Ledvarian. The Sheltie floated on air above the bed, snapping and snarling to keep the woman away from Bayron, who lay in the bed, bloody and too still. Janelle rushed over to the bed. Cyril remained by the door, a knife in her hand. Ledvarian continued snarling at the healer, and Damon, riding the killing edge, watched everyone in the room as he assessed the stink of the adult's psychic sense. Fear, desperation, and a petty satisfaction that it wasn't their boy lying wounded in the bed, and something more that he couldn't identify. Yet.
"You whoring bitch!"
Planting one knee on air, Janelle threw herself across the bed, grabbed the healer's jewel, and channeled a blast of power through cold rage. Cyril yelped in surprise. Other people screamed, and the healer shrieked as Janelle shattered the woman's jewels, both ranking jewel and birthright, breaking her back to basic craft. Windows shattered. The walls of the room cracked in patterns that made Damon think a violent lightning storm had been etched on the plaster. He felt as if the winds had turned into a funnel of speed and power that would sweep away anything in its path, and he was standing at the edge of that fury. Then the power and fury were gone, reclaimed by the witch who had unleashed it. Janelle opened her hand. The shattered pieces of the healer's jewel fell to the floor, completely empty of power. Pushing against air, Janelle returned to the other side of the bed.
Lady?
Damon asked sharply.
She was destroying Baron's vocal cords under the guise of healing his throat,
Janelle snarled. He didn't ask how she knew or if she was certain the harm was deliberate. Janelle wouldn't have broken a healer that way unless she was certain. Damon looked at the adults, then at Hayes, who was curled up on the floor. Everyone in the room had known the bitch was doing it, including the boy who was supposed to be Baron's friend. That was the something more he had picked up in their psychic sense. Their worry that someone would find out they had stood by and allowed Baron to be harmed. Well, someone had, and he wasn't about to overlook or forgive anything. While witch's fury shook the room, Ladvarian had pressed himself against the bed over Baron's legs. Now he stood up, shook himself vigorously, and looked at Janelle.
This room has bad smells, and it is getting cold. You should take Baron to the coach so you can heal him properly. Surreal will guard you while the prince and I look for Lady Sylvia.
Why aren't you being that bossy?
Surreal asked Damon on a gray thread.
I wouldn't have dared. Not yet, anyway, he replied dryly.
Janelle looked at Baron.
Agreed.
She pulled the top sheet loose. Ladvarian jumped off the bed as she floated the boy on air and wrapped the sheet around him.
Can you handle this?
Damon asked, surreal.
Do you have a problem with me burying anyone who upsets her?
No problem at all.
Then I can handle this.
Ladvarian went with the women as they hurried to get Baron to the coach. Damon remained, his hands in his coat pockets, doing nothing but staring at the people huddled together. Now that Witch was out of the room, he was, once more, the dominant predator.
Prince?
The male voice was unfamiliar and cautious. Not surprising, since the man was coming up behind him and wouldn't want to be mistaken for an enemy. Looking over his shoulder, Damon studied the warlord wearing the badge of a Master of the Guard.
Come in.
The master entered the room, flanked by several other warlords.
Someone has been hurt?
The Queen of Holloway's son,
Damon replied.
And Lady Sylvia is missing.
How may we be of service?
The master's voice turned grim. Lord Ladvarian and I are going to search the grounds for Lady Sylvia. Have some of your men search the house. Damon pointed at the healer, then at the adults he assumed were Sylvia's hosts. Keep them under guard, separately, until I'm ready to have a little chat. Take the boy to his room, under protection.
Done,
the master said. Damon walked out of the room as the warlords swarmed around the people being detained. The master followed him out.
Something else?
Damon asked, pausing at the top of the stairs.
Does this have anything to do with the missing children?
Cold rage swept through him, but he kept it chained.
What do you know about missing children?
And why hadn't you shown some balls and come up to the hall to tell me about them?
The master licked his lips, a nervous movement.
Sometimes borders are just lines on a map. The folks living in the towns and villages on the other side of the border in Little Tyrael, they're good people. We have no quarrel with them. When children started going missing, they asked us to keep a lookout for them. Not hard to do.
A child from little to real isn't going to have the looks that would blend in with Demlin children, so he's easy enough to spot. Most of the time, when a youngster runs away, he's angry or unhappy, but no one has done him real harm, if you understand me.
I do. And if you do suspect real harm?
The youngster is brought before the queen and isn't returned to his family unless she's satisfied that the reason he left home wasn't more than growing pains.
Do you think the missing children are runaways?
The master hesitated, then shook his head. No, I don't think so. We've checked the runaway houses within our queen's territory.
Most small villages had at least one runaway house. A safe place an unhappy child could go to receive a hug, nut cakes, and a sympathetic ear, or be given some space to brood over some trouble at home. I want to know if there are any children missing from Demlin villages.
I'll check with the village guards, but I haven't heard of any children going missing,
the master said. Then he finished grimly.
Which doesn't mean there haven't been some that have gone missing.
I want daily reports until this is settled, Damon said as he started down the stairs.
You'll have them.
And get in touch with the province queen's master and make him aware. Damon! The urgency in Latverian's voice made him rush down the rest of the stairs and out of the house. Dim balls of witchlight hung over a spot in the garden, so it wasn't hard to find the dog. And it wasn't hard to see what the Sheltie had found. Latverian circled the lower halves of two severed legs. The legs were bare, the feet were still covered by ankle boots.
These smell like Sylvia,
Latverian growled as he daintily walked on air to avoid leaving paw prints in the blood.
And I smell dead flesh.
Damon caught himself before pointing out that the severed legs were dead flesh. The dog had grown up at the hall and had been given the same training and protocol as any other young male who had resided there. Latverian wouldn't use a disrespectful description simply because a person was demon dead, so calling someone dead flesh was an indication of the dog's contempt for the person, an indication that the scent belonged to an enemy.
Track the dead flesh, but don't go farther than these gardens, Damon said. I'll search for Sylvia, and stay shielded.
I will. Latverian headed down a path that led away from the house. Damon put a black shield around the legs to prevent anyone from taking them. Then he searched the ground for a blood trail. Nothing clean about the severing, so there should be plenty of blood for him to follow. Unless the attacker had used craft and vanished Sylvia. Those personal storage cupboards the blood created with craft and power couldn't support anything that was alive, but you could move a body that way, or kill someone who was wounded. He found blood splashed over the tops of plants, following a line where there was no trail. Stepping up on air to stand level with the tops of the plants, Damon created a brighter ball of witchlight and followed the spray until he found a spot in the garden that looked crushed by a body, and he found pools of blood. Not as much as he'd expected, not if Sylvia had still been alive when she'd landed there, but enough to tell him where he needed to look for Halloway's queen. Latverian trotted up to him, also balanced on air.
The dead flesh is gone, but its smells are strong in some parts of the garden.
Hunting here? Damon looked around. Sylvia had landed close to one of the garden paths. If she did make the transition, he sighed.
She's not here.
Tildy and Michael are not here either, Latverian said. I have called Tildy. She doesn't answer.
All right, let's take care of the living, and then we'll see what we can do about the dead. They retraced their steps back to the house. As they passed the point of attack, Damon wrapped a tight shield around the legs and vanished them.
Seeing Cyril standing near the front door, talking to the master, Ledvarian trotted over to the coach, then had to wait for Janelle to create an opening in the shields and let him in. Reassured when he saw the precautions his lady had taken, Damon joined Cyril and the master.
"They didn't find Michael or Tildy, or Sylvia," Cyril said. "And no one seems to know where the younger son of the house has gone,"
the master said.
"Oh, sugar, I think they know," Cyril replied.
Which meant there was at least one child whose disappearance had gone unreported. Either Sylvia stumbled onto something evil here, or she'd been lured here to be sacrificed. Either way, none of the people he needed to talk to the most were here.
"Cyril, go get the boy," Damon said. "Pack up anything you can as fast as you can. We're taking him with us."
No matter what part Hayes had played in setting this trap, Damon wasn't going to leave a child in this place.
"Give me 10 minutes.
She opened the front door and went inside.
"Do you want us to stay?"
the master asked. "No. You need to keep a tight watch on your own village. I'll contact the province queen and have her send in some guards."
"This village has guards," the master said. "Do you want me to talk to them before I go?"
"Do you think it will make any difference?"
Damon's voice was dry, biting. The master stared at him, then swore.
"They're blind to what's going on in their own village, and it may be deliberate. That's what you're saying?"
"That's what I'm saying. This village is under your queen's hand. As her master, these guards are under your command, same as the men in her home village. Would you vouch for them?"
"A couple of months ago, I would have. Now?"
The master shook his head.
"They knew about the children that had gone missing across the border. If there was any hint of something being wrong here, my queen should have been told."
"And the Queen of Holloway should have been informed so that she wouldn't have come to such a place without an escort," Damon thought. "If she came at all."
Unless he was totally wrong about the man standing in front of him, that mistake wouldn't be repeated. He suspected that, by tomorrow, the master would contact every other master of the guard in Demlin, encouraging them to insist that their queens have an escort for any kind of visit outside the home village. But if the other masters weren't informed, that would tell him something about this man, too. The front door opened. Cyril came out, one hand loosely gripping Hayes's arm. She said nothing to the men, just escorted the boy to the coach.
"What do you want done with the healer and this family?"
the master asked. He wanted to rip them all apart to find out what they knew about Sylvia's attacker. But the prudent thing to do, the right thing, was to let the district queen deal with the people in her territory. And if he wasn't satisfied with how the district queen dealt with these people, he would take care of them, quietly.
"Take them to your lady," Damon said. "I'm sure she'll have some questions about what happened here tonight."
"I'm sure she will,"
the master said. Telling himself to be satisfied with that, for now, Damon walked over to the coach and went in. The driver was warming some milk and talking softly to Hayes, who huddled in one corner of a short bench. The man tipped his head toward the driver's compartment and made a face Damon took to mean, "There's trouble in there." More than trouble, he decided, when he opened the compartment door and Cyril swiveled her chair to face him.
"Janelle wants to leave as soon as you're ready," she said. "She has Baron in the bedroom at the back of the coach."
He stayed in the door, assessing her temper. "Tell me."
Bad place for a fight, he thought, especially with Janelle doing a healing.
"There is some damage to Bayron's vision and hearing."
Cyril's voice was low and savage. "That healer wasn't just destroying his ability to speak. She was destroying his ability to see and hear." Because she was so close to snapping, he kept his voice quiet and calm, and kept his own temper viciously leashed.
Could the loss of vision and hearing be conditions that had developed prior to...
She shot out of the chair and stood in front of him.
There was nothing wrong with him before that bitch put her filthy hands on him. And I'm telling you now, Saadi, one way or another, she is not going to be among the living much longer.
We have other things to deal with first.
He waited to see if she had any control left, and was relieved when she nodded and blew out a breath.
Yeah, she said. Yeah, we do.
She returned to her seat. Damon took off his winter coat and vanished it before closing the compartment door and taking the other seat. They didn't speak again until he lifted the coach and used craft to glide it through the air. Once they reached one of the village's landing webs, he caught the black winds and headed for Halloway.
Did you find any sign of Sylvia?
Cyril asked.
Yes.
She stared at him, then looked away.
Shit.
We take care of Beiren, find out what Hayes knows about what happened and why, and figure out where Tildy took Michael.
Damon said,
And Sylvia?
He sighed.
I think the High Lord is more likely to find her before we do.
Chapter 2 Satan lit the black candles on the keep's dark altar and opened the gate between Hell and Kalir. Sometimes it was damn hard not to interfere with the living, especially when children were involved. Especially when some of them lately were arriving so mentally and emotionally damaged, they couldn't be allowed to stay on the Sildru Diath's island, let alone be with the children now residing at the hall in the Dark Realm. He'd given mercy to the ones who were too damaged, draining their remaining power to finish the kill, giving them what peace he could in the process. It wasn't his place to interfere or step in. He had held that line for thousands of years, at least most of the time. But that last mutilated child had come from Demlin, and he didn't consider it interfering to inform the warlord prince of Demlin about that boy. Not when the prince was his own son.
Satan?
A whisper of thought on a psychic thread, barely strong enough to reach him. But no matter how weak, he knew that voice, had loved that woman.
Sylvia, where are you?
Landing web. Keep. Not sure which one.
He left the dark altar and moved swiftly, straining the muscles in his bad leg as he moved through the corridors in the keep.
Draka,
Satan called.
Sylvia is here. Something is wrong. We need to find her quickly.
I will inform Jeffrey,
Draka said.
We will look.
It wouldn't be just the keep's seneschal and historian librarian who would look. What guarded the keep would be aware of Sylvia and would inform Draka. Meanwhile, he headed for the landing web most often used by people who didn't live in Ebon Rhee.
Satan?
Sylvia called again, her voice fading. He found her sprawled on the landing web, trying to push herself to an upright position and too weak to do it. He rushed over to her and dropped to his knees, lifting her enough to hold her against him.
Sylvia, what?
Demon dead. He knew the scent, knew the feel. How could he not know after ruling Hell for so many years? She was demon dead and fading. Both of her jewels, the purple dusk and her birthright summer sky, hung around her neck and she wore both her rings. Only a drop or two of power left in each of them.
Satan.
Her voice was barely audible, but she still found enough strength to grab a fistful of his jacket.
I know how you feel about interfering with the living, but I'm begging you, help me save my boys.
He didn't ask questions.
He simply called in a small vial, flipped off the top, and closed his hand around it to give the contents a moment's warmth. Then he pressed the vial against her lips and said, "Drink." She swallowed once, then tried to get away from him. He held her tight and held the vial away from her to prevent her from knocking it out of his hand.
"Hell's fire," she gasped. "What is that?"
"A vial of Janelle's undiluted blood," he replied dryly. "If you think it's bad now, you should have tried it when she wore ebony. A couple drops of that used to feel like you swallowed lightning."
"You're a mean bastard."
"And you want my help, so stop being a whiny girl. Just hold your nose and take your medicine."
"I am not whining, you—"
He poured the rest of the blood down her throat. Since he and Jeffrey usually split one of those vials, he knew exactly what he'd done to the woman he loved, which was why he let her swear at him until she wound down enough to sound sane again. He vanished the vial.
"Let's get you cleaned up, then we can—"
That was when he realized what was wrong with her legs. Using craft to take part of her weight, he picked her up and headed for a guest room located near his own suite of rooms.
"Lucivar,"
he called on a spear thread.
"Father?"
Jolting Lucivar awake would hone the sharp edge of an always sharp temper, but he'd deal with that when he had to.
"I need your healer at the keep. It's urgent. We'll be there."
Lucivar broke the link. Draka waited for him at the doorway of the guest room. When she saw Sylvia, she looked into the room. A marble slab appeared, heavily padded and floating on air.
"It is more practical,"
Draka said. Nodding, he went into the room and laid Sylvia on the padding.
"All right,"
he said, winding a soothing spell through his voice.
"Let's take a look at you."
"No,"
Sylvia said. He ignored her, pulled aside the torn coat and shirt, and stared at the knife wound that had killed her. He vanished the coat and shirt, then hesitated over the brassiere. It shouldn't matter now, but it would, so he didn't remove it. Instead, he called in a blanket and wrapped it around her, so she wouldn't feel embarrassed when Lucivar thundered into the room. Which Lucivar did a minute later, followed by Nurian.
"Mother Night,"
Nurian said as she rushed over to the slab. She reached out, her hands hovering over Sylvia's ruined legs.
"What happened?"
Satan put his arms around Sylvia, pressing her face against his shoulder.
"You need to make a clean amputation, then force the healing to create a closed stump."
"But she's—"
Nurian swallowed hard, but she met Satan's eyes.
"I don't think it can be done when the flesh is no longer living."
"When it's done within a few hours of dying, the body still remembers what it feels like to be alive and will respond."
Nurian looked at Sylvia's jewels and shook her head.
"It would drain her beyond surviving."
"She's just had fresh blood. That will sustain her and provide you with what you need to draw for the healing,"
Satan said.
"Whose blood did you give her?"
Lucivar asked.
"Janelle's." "Half a vial?" "A whole vial."
Lucivar looked at Nurian.
"Do it. You've got more than enough power to work with, so tap everything you need because you only get one chance at this kind of healing. If more blood is needed, I'll supply it."
Holding Sylvia close, covering her face with one hand, Satan watched Lucivar call in a small knife and efficiently cut away the trousers while Nurian began making the cleansing brews she would need. Lucivar studied the jagged bones and torn flesh, saying nothing, but Satan had the impression those bones told his Irian son a great deal. There wouldn't be pain,
because the numbing spells would take care of that. Some discomfort, yes, because flesh so newly dead still remembered. And the potency of the blood he could provide for her would keep her close to the line that separated the dead from the living, at least for a little while. When Nurian was ready, Lucivar shifted Sylvia's hips, straightening the legs. He pressed his hands on her thighs, holding her in place. She cried, and it ripped at Satan's heart. Lucivar's body blocked most of her line of sight, but Satan still covered her eyes so she wouldn't get even a glimpse of Nurian's work. And while he held her, he sent out a call to his other son.
Damon. Damon.
No answer.
Janelle.
No answer.
Surreal.
No answer. Which meant they weren't at Saw Diablo Hall or in Halloway, or anywhere in that part of Kalir, for that matter. Of course, if they were riding the winds, they couldn't hear him. Swallowing a snarl of impatience, Satan continued to wrap soothing spells around Sylvia until he felt her go limp. Laying her down, he smoothed the hair away from her face. Lucivar gave him a sharp look.
"I did that,"
Satan said.
"Her mind needs to rest. Lady Nurian, can you do without us for a few minutes?"
"I'll be fine,"
Nurian said. He and Lucivar stepped out of the room and moved a few paces down the corridor.
A blast of power hit her knees, blowing them out and taking the lower part of her legs with them,
Lucivar said, keeping his voice low.
"If she was shielded, whoever did this wore an opal, a green jewel at the most. How can you tell?"
Lucivar gave him an odd look.
"Because I know how her legs would look if I had hit her with my red strength."
"Of course."
"Her boys are in trouble."
Lucivar nodded.
"There must have been a fight somewhere. Did she bleed out from the legs?"
Satan shook his head.
"She probably would have bled out if none of her guards survived to help her. But a knife between the ribs is what killed her. What did Damon say?" "He's not answering." "All right. You look after Nurian, and I'll go to the hall and find out what's happening."
Lucivar hesitated.
"Do you think her boys are going to become Sildrudiath?" "I hope not. But I do need to talk to Damon about some children who have become Sildrudiath in the past few weeks. I'll let him know."
Satan watched Lucivar walk away. His sons were strong leaders and powerful men. He would trust them to take care of the living, while he took care of the dead. Chapter 3. Alert for anything or anyone who didn't belong around his home, Damon watched Janelle and Surreal hustle Baron and Hayes into the hall, followed by Ledvarian. Just as he was about to go inside, he heard hooves and carriage wheels coming up the drive. He stopped and nodded to Beale, who closed the hall's front doors. Then he turned and waited for his visitor. Considering the hour, it didn't surprise him when Renier stepped out of the horse-drawn cab. What did surprise him was Lucivar's sudden appearance on the landing web. He'd expected to see his brother, just not this soon.
"Give me a minute, prick," he said.
Lucivar stepped off the landing web, but didn't come closer.
"Report,"
Damon said quietly to Renier.
"Sylvia's court is furious,"
Renier replied. Her master and steward had no reason to think any harm would come to their queen. They had the impression that the guest rooms were already stuffed with people, which was why Lord Hayes's family fumbled over having even one escort staying with Sylvia.
"There were no other guests,"
Damon said.
"This was a trap set for Sylvia?"
Renier shook his head, as if answering his own question.
"No.
I was told the first invitation didn't include her. Unless she's visiting close friends, a queen usually travels with at least one escort, Damon said. So Sylvia's presence could have been inconvenient if she'd arrived with one or two of her first circle in attendance. According to the steward, the second invitation was extended to Sylvia's family, as a family, not to a queen and her sons. They gambled she would sympathize with another woman's desire to reciprocate invitations without beggaring her own family. Unfortunately, they gambled correctly.
Prince?
He heard the alarm in Reniere's voice, but chose to ignore the question under the word. I brought Hayes back with us. The boy needs protection from whatever is wrong in that place. I'd like you to talk to him and find out everything you can about what's been going on around his house and the village. You may have to circle around this, but I want to know why his younger brother wasn't at home. Done. Reniere looked at the hall, then at Lucivar, who was still waiting near the landing web. Did Sylvia come back with you?
No,
Damon said softly. Reniere took a couple of slow, steady breaths. Then he approached the hall's doors, which opened before he could reach for the knocker. When the doors closed again, Lucivar walked up to Damon.
How bad?
Lucivar asked. Baron's hurt, and at least half of his injuries were caused deliberately by the bitch healer that family hired to take care of him. Janelle's working on him, has been since we found him. She says he'll be all right, and may the darkness have mercy on that family if she can't bring him all the way back to full health.
Michael?
Sylvia told Tildy to run. We haven't found her or Michael yet. Damon blew out a breath and watched the white plume it made.
You've seen Sylvia?
Yes.
Has father?
Lucivar looked sad and grim.
Yes. She made the transition to demon dead and reached the keep before draining her jewels completely. He poured a vial of Janelle's blood down her throat.
Damon huffed out a pained laugh.
Well, that should give her temper plenty of scratch and kick.
The moment he said the word kick, he felt grief clog his throat.
I brought her legs. I wasn't going to leave any part of her there. Now I'm not sure what to do with them.
Satan wants to see you. He's troubled by some Sildru Dioth who have appeared in the Dark Realm recently. You can ask him what should be done.
Lucivar shifted his weight, rubbed his hands together.
Do you want to go in?
Damon asked.
I figure you have a reason for standing out here in the cold.
That simple. It usually was between him and Lucivar. He blew out another breath, just to watch it plume in the cold night air.
If you were Tildy, where would you run?
You already know the answer, old son.
I'd like confirmation that I'm thinking like a Sheltie.
All right. If she or Michael are wounded, she would go to the closest Sheltie for help protecting the boy. If they got out before things turned ugly, there are four places I would look. Here, their home, Manny's cottage, and Terce's cottage. I would go to Terce's first. Michael considers it his second home, and he's her Michael boy. He's family.
And Terce is dangerous when it comes to family.
Yeah, which is why I would go there to hide if I were a Sheltie running from danger with one of Terce's boys.
Lucivar remained silent for a minute. Then he huffed out a breath.
So are we going to go down and knock on her door or wait until morning, or just stand here and freeze our balls?
The hall's doors opened. Beale said,
Prince, the carriage will be around front in a minute.
He closed the doors. Lucivar looked at Damon.
Did you ask for a carriage to be brought around?
Apparently.
Did you think to ask for hot coffee and something to eat?
Damon said blandly,
We'll have to find out.
Cyril paced the corridor guarding the guest rooms that held Beiren and Hayes. At the midway point, she passed Ledvarian, who trotted in the opposite direction. At the end of the corridor, they both turned and resumed their patrol. The restless pacing wasn't necessary. She could have sat in one place and used a psychic probe to remain aware of everything and everyone in and around those rooms, but she needed to move. All right, the truth was she wanted to go after the son of a whoring bitch who had hurt at least one boy she liked and a woman she considered a friend. She wanted to rip and tear and stab until the enemy was nothing more than a bloody pile of shit. Or find her prey and make the kill quietly, using one of those elegant death spells Saadi had taught her so many years ago. So damn hard to pace and wait. Since he hadn't been with them, Renier would have better luck coaxing information out of Hayes, and her presence in the room would interfere with that. She was more than useless in Beiren's room while Janelle was working on the delicate healing needed to restore the boy's vision, hearing, and voice. Then Ledvarian froze. Cyril called in her favorite stiletto and stood still, listening.
"It's Tildy," Ledvarian said. "She is tired. Michael is upset. They are with Tersa."
"Saadi," Cyril called on a psychic thread. "Tildy and Michael are with Tersa."
"We're almost at the cottage," he replied.
"Any news about Sylvia?"
A hesitation. "She's with the High Lord." He didn't need to say more.
"The Michael boy is upset," Tersa said, blocking the stairs that led to the bedrooms. "The Sheltie is upset and says they must hide."
Damon wasn't sure if she was asking for clarification or warning him not to push. He took her hands because sometimes physical contact helped her mind stay focused on the mundane world instead of wandering down a path in the Twisted Kingdom. "Beiren is injured, and Sylvia is dead," he said gently. "I need to see Michael to make sure he wasn't harmed before Tildy got him away from that place."
"Oh," Tersa said softly. "He's so young to lose his mother."
"I was younger when I was taken from you," Damon thought as he drew her away from the stairs.
"Perhaps some warm milk?"
Tersa looked at him, then at Lucivar.
"Do you need help making it?"
Lucivar asked.
"No, I can warm milk."
She walked down the hallway to the kitchen, leaving them to climb the stairs. Michael was in the Michael boy's bedroom, since he was Tersa's most frequent guest. The covers were pulled out and rumpled, which Damon found alarming, since it looked like a struggle had taken place. Then he saw part of Tildy's head poking out from the covers at the bottom of the bed. She had done the rumpling to have a hiding place from which she could easily attack, and since Michael was pressed against the headboard on the side of the bed farthest from the door and would draw a person's eye first, an intruder moving toward the boy would put himself in a position to receive intimate damage from a pissed-off Sheltie with sharp teeth. Even if the intruder's shield held against her summer sky, the clash of power would alert everyone nearby that there was trouble.
"Lady Tildy, please attend," Lucivar said. "Prince Saadi needs to speak to Lord Michael."
Using the formal titles turned the request into a command. Tildy wiggled out from under the covers and followed Lucivar downstairs. Damon sat on the edge of the bed near Michael.
"Are you hurt?"
he asked quietly. Michael shook his head. Then he frowned and pushed up one sleeve.
"Well, my arm hurts a little, but Tildy didn't mean it. She grabbed me and said we had to run and hide. Mother said so. I wanted to find out why, but Tildy wouldn't let go of my arm, so we left, and she wouldn't stop, and it took a long time to ride the winds. And then we were here, and Tildy told Tersa that something bad had happened, but she didn't know what the bad thing was, only that we were supposed to hide.
Damon lightly brushed his fingertips over Michael's arm. The Sheltie hadn't broken the skin, but she'd clamped down hard enough to leave bruises.
Prince, before Tildy caught the winds and took us away from that house, I heard Beiren yell. It sounded bad. Is he hurt?
Damon swallowed the lump in his throat. Yes, he's hurt. But Lady Angeline is doing the healing, and she's taking good care of him.
Then who's taking care of Mother? She wouldn't have told Tildy to run unless something bad happened.
He brushed back Michael's hair. The boy needed to have it cut soon. Who would remember the small things like that now?
I'm sorry, Boyle. I am so sorry. But your mother is dead.
Michael was silent for so long, Damon wondered if the words had been understood.
Can't the High Lord fix her so she can come back and live with us?
Michael asked in a small voice.
She would have to sleep in the daytime, but that would be all right. I'd get my chores and schoolwork done before she woke up. I would.
It's not that easy for someone who is demon dead to be among the living. Who was he to say such a thing to this child? Most of his family had been demon dead and had lived at the hall for years in order to be with Janelle. Satan had not only been Sylvia's lover, he'd been Michael's surrogate father.
The High Lord could fix it, Michael insisted.
There was hope and conviction in those words, and fear that it wouldn't be true.
Can't you ask him to fix it?
Damon's eyes filled with tears. He pulled the boy close and hugged him, rocking them both for comfort.
I don't know if he can fix this, Michael. I don't know if he can, but I'll ask him. I promise that I'll ask him.
An hour later, Michael and Tildy were snoring in a freshly made bed, and Damon and Lucivar were in the carriage heading back to the hall.
You couldn't have said anything else, Lucivar told him. Not to a boy who has rubbed elbows with our family as much as he has.
Sylvia is a queen, Damon said wearily.
Letting a demon-dead queen continue to rule would set a dangerous precedent, and it would be hard for her to remain anywhere near Halloway and watch another queen rule her people, especially if she didn't like some of the choices the new queen made. Families and villages and territories need to let go of the dead and move on, and the demon-dead need to let go of the living.
The boy doesn't give a damn about Sylvia the queen. Right now he just wants the assurance that his mother will still be there to read him a story and tuck him in at night,
Lucivar said.
I know that prick. I know.
Damon pressed his fingertips against his temples and tried to ease some of the tension.
Do you think Sylvia's father will want the boys to live with him?
Lucivar asked.
Maybe. What the boys want will have more weight than any adult.
A trickle of anger pushed aside the weariness.
But I'll tell you who isn't going to have the boys. Their sires.
I didn't think either of them had been granted paternal rights, or wanted them.
They didn't, but Michael's sire has come sniffing around a couple of times in recent months, expressing interest in his son and wanting to become acquainted.
Why?
From what I found out after the first time he came around, his service as a consort has earned him notoriety rather than the lucrative and illustrious positions he'd envisioned would be his when he walked away from Sylvia and her little village.
And I thought Father was the only one who disliked her former consorts,
Lucivar said dryly. Damon lowered his hands and rested his head on the back of the seat. "You will never repeat this to Janelle, but after that son of a whoring bitch came around a second time, I told Kalis and Jal that if he trespassed on any property that belonged to the family, and that included the land around Manny's and Terce's cottages, they had my permission to eat him. I said it within the bastard's hearing. I haven't seen him since." Lucivar stared at him for a moment before laughing.
"Hell's fire, bastard. You do like to dance on the knife's edge."
Maybe. Or maybe he felt fairly sure that Janelle wouldn't object too strenuously if she did find out. "Prince," Renier said on a psychic thread.
"Renier," Damon replied. "Anything to report? I know why Sylvia's family was lured down to that place, but I didn't find out anything that will help you hunt down the bastard. If you and Prince Yaslan are coming back to the hall, Cyril wants to go back to our house in Halloway and get some sleep. She knows she has a suite at the hall, and I have a suite too, and there's no point in you reminding her, because Beale already has, twice, but she wants to be in the village, closer to Terce and Manny, just in case.
All right, I'll stop by in the morning before I go to the keep."
He broke the link and closed his eyes.
"Can you stay until morning?"
he asked Lucivar.
"I'll be heading to the keep after I talk to Renier." "I can stay. I'll check on Terce and Michael while you get Renier's report. Maybe between us we can give Sylvia a little peace."
And maybe by tomorrow he would have a better idea of how to find the bastard who had ended a good queen's life. Chapter 4. Sylvia jerked awake and tried to pull herself out of a memory dream about Michael and Tildy. It was during the first year Tildy had lived with them. Michael had snitched some goody from the kitchen earlier that day and hidden it under his bed for the two of them to have as a treat late that night, not realizing that the treat would spoil if left outside the cold box on a summer day. Tildy had thought it smelled bad, but the boy assured her it was wonderful, so boy and Chelty had gobbled up the treat. She still remembered Michael's panicked yells and running into his bedroom to discover that Tildy had vomited all over his lap. In the seconds it took her to realize the dog was extremely ill and needed healing help from someone who knew Kindred, Michael began throwing up. So there she was, very late at night, pounding on the hall's front door, holding a blanket-wrapped Shelty, who was covered in Michael's puke, while her court healer was taking care of Michael. And Beiren was running to fetch Manny and Terce. Janelle had taken one look at Tildy, asked what she and Michael had eaten, and then poured a tonic down the dog's throat. An hour later, Sylvia was back home with an embarrassed, freshly bathed Shelty, who was greeted by an equally embarrassed, freshly bathed boy. For a few years after that incident, on the days when Michael attended the village school, Tildy went up to the hall for her own kind of lessons. The two of them had gotten into their share of trouble since then, but when Tildy told Michael something was bad, the boy didn't argue.
"Why would I dream about that now?"
she wondered. Then she remembered she'd told Tildy to run.
"The boys."
Rolling over on her side, Sylvia tried to fling the covers back and push her legs over the edge of the bed, but an arm tightened around her waist.
"Easy," Satan said. "From now on, you have to think before you get out of bed. The boys are safe. Beiren was injured, but he's at the hall in Janelle's care. We'll find out more when Damon and Lucivar arrive here in a couple of hours."
Sylvia shivered.
"And Michael?"
Satan's arm didn't move from her waist, but the covers settled in place around her.
Tildy grabbed Michael and didn't stop running until she got them to Terce's cottage. They're upset, but otherwise they're fine.
Thank the darkness.
All her strength seemed to drain away once she knew her sons were safe. She rolled onto her back and remembered the rest. The candlelight in the bedside lamp began to glow softly, providing just enough light for her to see the man who raised himself up on one elbow to look at her.
"You are not under the covers," she said. "Is it because of how my legs look?"
"My darling Sylvia, I am the High Lord of Hell. I have seen much worse than truncated legs. No, I'm above the covers because I didn't want you to wake up alone, but you weren't in any condition to extend an invitation to sleep with you."
She let out a pained laugh.
"You're still going to insist on propriety?"
"Your body is dead. You are not. That being the case, I see no reason to dispense with propriety or any other courtesy,"
he said, with just enough bite to make her feel chastised. No, he wouldn't dispense with propriety or courtesy or the Blood's protocol or their code of honor, and she doubted the demon dead were allowed to dispense with those things either, not if they wanted to extend their existence a while longer after the physical death.
"Satan."
She wasn't sure what she was asking of him, wasn't even sure if she was asking anything. But he bent his head and gave her one of those slow, thorough kisses that used to make her knees weak. When his mind surrounded hers, she felt the wave of sensuality that used to bring her an orgasm before his hands touched her. Now it felt comforting, but it was her heart and not her body that felt that comfort. He ended the kiss and eased back enough to look at her.
"Everything has a price."
Being demon dead wasn't the same as being among the living. Herself was now encased in dead flesh. Sylvia the woman could still feel love, but her body no longer felt the pleasures of sex. She tried to shift away from him, but he rolled just enough to pin her.
"I think you would like some answers to some questions you don't want to ask,"
Satan said.
"Can I love you when sex is no longer part of that love? Yes, I can and do. Do I still want to spend time with you and sleep with you? Yes, I do. I couldn't remain with you when you were among the living, but there is no reason why we can't be together now, if that's something you want to."
"For how long?"
she asked.
"For as long as you want,"
he replied.
"You'll know when it's time to go, and I won't ask you to stay a day longer."
"My legs."
"An illusion spell and some craft to airwalk can hide the loss from the eye."
"That would be a constant drain of power."
"Yes, it would, and not a necessary drain on most days, in my opinion."
He looked at the two pendants resting on her chest.
"It looks like the dose of Janelle's blood had enough power in it to fuel the healing and fill both of your jewel's reservoirs part way. That's a good start."
"Good start? Oh, no. Hell's fire. You're not going to make me drink more of that stuff, are you?"
"Not immediately,"
he said dryly.
"But it's a simple fact that the darker the power, the less blood that's required to sustain someone who is demon dead."
"Plain speaking, High Lord."
"Once your power is restored, Yarborough will be sufficient most days. Twice a month, you'll have a small amount of fresh human blood."
She narrowed her eyes.
"Whose blood?"
He gave her a smile that had her pressing into the bed.
"That depends on whether a certain lady thinks you look peaky. I strongly recommend not draining yourself to the point of looking peaky."
"Mother Night."
"And may the darkness be merciful."
Satan shifted so he no longer pinned her.
"But as I said earlier, you should be grateful you never had ebony strength blood pour down your throat."
He rolled out of bed.
"All right, witchling. Nurian will be back before sunup to take a look at your legs. but she already confirmed that her shields will keep everything protected, so you can have a bath beforehand. I expect Damon and Lucivar to arrive before sunup as well, since they both know you'll need sleep during the daylight hours.